This week, the precious metals breakout continued. Gold topped $1,350 on track to retest last year's bull market highs. Well, welcome back, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek, here with you. We've got another two big guest interviews lined up. Dr. Stephen Leeb says this gold market breakout could be the real deal. He says there's a potential all-in buying opportunity. We also discussed the Bitcoin revolution and China's dominance of that market, as well as the precious metals, and just how we here in the U.S. and our military services, including the Pentagon, could use this to their advantage, get ahead of the trend. He expects the yellow metal to continue soaring and perhaps even have a Bitcoin-like moment, which on to the next guest, Bill Murphy from Goddard, good friend, says he sees something similar. He expects 21 an ounce. And unfortunately, I really need to bring up what could be the worst national tragedy we've seen to date, the worst disaster at least, Hurricane Harvey. There might be something just as bad or maybe even worse. Hurricane Irma is now forecasted to make landfall in Florida late Saturday or early Sunday, posing safety and economic issues all across the state. The current forecast actually shows it covering the east and the west coast. That's right, the Gulf and the Atlantic coasts, well out to sea, 140 miles in diameter, covering the entire peninsula all the way from the Keys through Miami, St. Petersburg, Tampa, Sarasota, and onward north to even Gainesville. This is a particularly frightening event. 160 to 192 mile per hour winds, and there have even been gusts well over 210. It's unprecedented in its size and its strength. Some are actually calling it worse than the infamous Hurricane Andrew that decimated much of the Atlantic coast. Irma sadly has wiped out one small nation right off the map. Barbuda lost 95% of its structures. We've lost over 10 people already. This hurricane is so dangerous, in my opinion, I think it will cover the entire Florida Peninsula unless something changes by Saturday or Sunday. I think we could see winds starting at around 175 miles per hour, running as high as 65 to 100 plus way up north in Gainesville, across the entire state. Frankly, I don't know that anything has ever occurred like what this could be in maybe 500 years. I mean, since settlers were first recording storms centuries ago. I don't mean to be an alarmist, but if you know anyone, and I sure do, ranging from the Keys all the way up to the Georgia borderline, seniors, disabled folks, please do all you can to reach out and support them. Perhaps offer a bedroom, a couch, even a garage, maybe a plane ticket. I understand that American Airlines has capped all flights out at $99. I think a marvelous thing for them to do. You could save a life here. Just because you're inland, it looks like there could literally be, and I don't say this easily, nowhere to hide. Please do all you can. And then, of course, Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. And remember to sign up for our big Alpha Stocks Bitcoin newsletter. Plus, we have a Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900. You'll need the mailbox number, 514049. That number again, 1-641-715-3900, followed by our mailbox number, 514049. You can leave your questions and your comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's not toll-free, though. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the precious metals sector for the third week running, finishing near the highest point in a year on news of a weaker U.S. dollar and treasury yields. Gold picked up $21, ending at $31.51. Silver ran higher by 31 cents, ending at $18.12. The precious metals XAU shares picked up 1.1%, ending at $91.65. And black gold was up 20 cents, finishing at $47.50. The top story sending the precious metals skyward, news that the greenback sliced through solid support, closing near the weekly lows, setting up for its first yearly decline in 5 years. Investors were rattled over geopolitical concerns, in particular North Korea's plans to launch an ICBM this Saturday. The U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis warned Pyongyang that any attacks on the U.S., on Japan or South Korea, would be met with massive military force. Nevertheless, Pyongyang is now expected to launch another missile commemorating North Korea's Foundation Day. Meanwhile, investors poured $1 billion into the largest gold ETF. That's the most in several years. Precious metals bottom line. Well, the dollar weakness is surprising here. The greenback had every chance to find support, but sliced below its 200 period moving average, closing near the lows on the weekly chart. This suggests big changes are ahead, that clearly investors were unnerved by reports of North Korea and, of course, potential fallout from Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and now Jose. The XAU exhaustion suggests momentum could slow, and there may be ample buying opportunities for folks as the precious metals perhaps move back in the coming weeks. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, partly cloudy skies appeared over the New York Stock Exchange as investors mulled over reverberations stemming from the Gulf and the Atlantic on the heels of yet another potentially devastating hurricane. The news sent the Dow Jones lower 189 points, closing at 21,800, while the S&P 500 fell 15, down to 2461 for the week. The Nasdaq yielded 75, recoiling from what was a new record close last week, finishing at 6360. The Bitcoin ETF fell about 10%, down 81 points to 720, while the Komodo coin blasted even higher to over $3 on news that it might soon host ICOs in defiance of recent ICO rulings this week, and on news that it may have accumulated shares in a bank to improve financial activities. One of the neatest aspects of the Komodo KMD coin is that you receive 5% at least annually per year. Payments are in Komodo as well. Every time you make a transaction, you receive the accumulated interest. So you could receive technically interest every day, if you like, simply by making transactions. It's a fascinating coin. I could see potentially $10 to $50 per token in the coming years, perhaps much higher. But again, that's my opinion, and I do own tokens. Moving on, a top story holding the markets down this week. News of Hurricane Harvey's destruction, the worst in history, might be rivaled by the fast-approaching Hurricane Irma. And, of course, then there's Jose behind it, threatening the entire Florida peninsula, as well as Georgia and South Carolina, their coastlines. Hurricane Irma is forecasted to make landfall in Florida, as mentioned earlier, Saturday or early Sunday, posing extreme safety and economic concerns on the heels of the devastating Hurricane Harvey. Bottom line on U.S. equities. Well, our favorite seven indicator greed to fear index remains in fearful territory. That, of course, from a contrarian perspective, this is a positive sign that could indicate a possible bounce in the coming days and weeks ahead. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. Always a pleasure to welcome back Bill Murphy from Gold Antitrust Action Committee GATA with Chris Powell. They're working on behalf of all precious metals investors. Welcome back, Bill Murphy.
Great to be back.
I wonder if we could dive right into this precious metals breakout. We've been talking about it for at least a year now, waiting for this big windup in the markets to unleash its full force, and some market technicians seem to think we might be there.
Prices are ridiculous in the sense of how low they are. They're artificially cheap thanks to the gold cartel and what they've done. And take a look at other assets like art and real estate and what the Dow has done, no matter what happens. That's never allowed to correct. The Bitcoin, cryptocurrency is going bonkers, and we're stuck down here at these prices. And it's the pressure building up in them is just enormous, and I would expect some kind of explosion coming sometime this fall, and I think it'll be dramatic, and they've got a long way to go to catch up and be where they should be already.
No, that's exactly what Dr. Stephen Leeb mentioned today on the show. He doesn't even consider the former 2010-2011 highs as resistance. He thinks that we'll be looking at those numbers in the rearview mirror in the coming months and years ahead. Any thoughts?
Well, yeah, we got to get there first, and it makes sense. I believe, as you know, many times we've spoken that I think once silver takes out 21, this is the gold cartel's kryptonite, is going to go bonkers, and it's going to trade like Bitcoin did. As I mentioned once before, you know, was at the Jeff Berwick's conference the end of January, early February, gold and Bitcoin were the same price, $1,240. And then all of a sudden, you have 8 months later, you get Bitcoin over at 5,000, and we're still up only, $1,000. So we have a long way to go, like I mentioned, and I think it's going to be spectacular. I think the slow move up is just, like we've had in the past, is not going to be there.
You know, as someone who has mined Litecoins and Bitcoins in the past, you know, it does require considerable energy, some technical knowledge and effort, computing power, to mine these cryptos. But in the final analysis, I've also been gold panning. In my college days, we lived near Villa Rica, which translates into the city of riches and wealth. And there were lots of mines back there. Just to find a few nuggets or a few flakes of the yellow metal takes a lot more effort than these interesting digital currencies. So I think you make a good point. I mean, it's time to see the precious metals play catch up. You know, we saw some signs of that in the last couple of weeks in the CRB index, the commodities index, showing real signs of life and support after breaking down for a while. Do you think that we'll see more momentum in the commodities sector, which might bode well for precious metals investors?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. You know, you've got copper up near a 3-year high. It's the other day at 315, 316, and yes, they have come to life. And I just can't stress enough how cheap silver is. When you take a look at what a copper price is doing, and you look at where silver is compared to the dollar, to gold, to other base metals now, I mean, it's because of what J.P. Morgan has done to suppress the price, and they're trying to keep that control, but they're going to lose it, and when they do, it's going to be a historic move to the upside.
I think we've talked in the past about 2010. Gold had run higher for several months to new highs in its bull market, actually highs that had never been recorded before, and silver just sat there. We might see a delayed response there, or maybe something different this time. But I certainly agree with you that on a valuation basis, silver probably can't be beat, at least in the precious metals sector. I think you'd agree it probably offers some of the best value there. You know, the gold and silver shares we've just seen the sine waving action now for at least a year for the most part. And then as of the last couple of weeks, big breakouts across the board. Do you expect that theme to persist?
I think, you know, they're just super cheap, and they're going to be moving sharply higher. I know I follow the HUI more than the XAU, and it's been moving steadily higher. If it takes out 222, it was around 217 the other day, 214 or so today, whatever. And I think when that is taken out, we'll complete a massive base, and we'll get some real excitement. You know, today they've been moving up constantly, but there hasn't been any excitement in the share sector whatsoever. It's just been going up, you know, as a matter of fact, as quietly as I can recall in recent years when we've had some up moves. And so it's good in a way because people are still asleep regarding what I think that they're going to do, and that is all still to come.
The real affinity has continued to be, I think you'd agree, in the tech shares. I mean, we continue to promote, you know, Google, Amazon, Netflix, and others, moving just as sprightly as a lot of our precious metals picks. So as long as there's that competition there, the precious metals will be sort of the sleeping, you know, sector to invest in that just surprises everyone once the primary markets roll over. But obviously a lot of concern with North Korea, issues that are developing there, a lot of tensions. We heard that they ignited a thermonuclear hydrogen bomb underground. This is a concern because it's many, many fold any other nuclear arsenal that's been used in actual warfare. And people are concerned if they ever combine the two, their ICBM technology with their thermonuclear devices, that it could be a threat to not only Japan and Guam and Hawaii, but perhaps the United States, the contiguous United States. Do you think that this is on investors' minds?
Well, I guess it certainly could be, and it's obviously potentially serious. I've never seen these geopolitical things mount to a hill of beans ever. They just, you know, yap at each other and make a lot of comments, and the thing goes away. But maybe this will be a first. Gold has moved up during this North Korean thing, and normally it gives its gains right back again. But I think there's so many other factors that are finally coming into play that are the real reasons gold and silver have been making moves to the upside, and I think they'll be more important. I think, quite frankly, the devastation to the Houston economies and to what's coming here in Florida, it looks unfortunately by this Irma hurricane, is liable to create far more problems for markets and so on, and what the United States is going to need to do to spend money and how it could affect the dollar than the North Korean issue.
This is something I've been watching just out of curiosity and out of concern for family in Florida on an almost hourly basis. I mean, Irma, some folks are referring to it as a potential Category 6 hurricane, which, of course, does not exist simply because it defies definition. This looks like a huge potential risk. Obviously, it's hit the Caribbean and soon Cuba, the Keys. But we're also concerned of, you know, Miami. I've been telling people for days now that Harvey will turn out to be the nation's biggest devastation. 100,000 homes at least destroyed and over a million cars, 250,000 people displaced, plus all the pets. This is our largest national tragedy. Maybe 200 mile per hour or higher sustained winds. I think this could wipe entire villages and cities off the map.
If it goes up, it hits Miami and goes up the coast. I mean, I guess they just are ordering evacuation from Broward County in Florida. I mean, it is really is that serious. And this is an issue that, I mean, what is it going to cost to repair this? Where is the money going to be coming from? They can't even, the United States Congress can't deal with a debt ceiling and always spending money on right now. And I think this is part of the reason the dollar is in such trouble. It almost took out 92 today. It's been collapsing. Talk about the perfect storm for the gold and silver markets. You never want it to happen for that kind of reason, but it's here. And unfortunately, all these things that have been so fundamentally bullish for years now that the gold cartel has put to the sidelines are all coming into play. And I think it's going to overpower the bad guys. And we could have, that's why I think we got some fireworks coming this fall.
Just read in the news that we're looking at the entire state of Florida in a state of emergency, every single county on alert. Now, some meteorologists may be a bit alarmist. They're saying since this is unprecedented, people need to get their minds around the idea that just leaving the coastline may not be sufficient. Because unlike Houston with Harvey, which is primarily a flooding issue due to the plains land estuaries, in Florida, the big issue they'll be facing is horrendous wind. So moving inland because of the size, the girth of Irma may not be sufficient to protect folks who move in hours or at least miles from the coastline. But any other topicality that I've missed that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Once again, the gold cartel is selling, the gold open interest is exploding, and the silver open interest, which we wanted to come down, had been doing just that, and then just yesterday it started to move up again. And basically, they're going to have the bad guys, as I call them, get our shortest can be, and the speculators are all moving in. And the norm is for the bad guys, then they'll take the specs out on the downside, and they sell their positions. And we've seen this for years. At some point, we're going to have a commercial signal failure in which all that ends, in which the gold cartel is going to be overpowered because the fundamentals are so strong that the physical market goes bananas, and they get taken out on the upside. And that's the only way we're ever going to get the move that Steve Lee was talking about, or I believe is coming. And I do think it's coming, and it's probably going to be caused by some black swan or gray rhino that comes out of nowhere. It most likely will occur when we least expect it. So that's the reason to stay long and be strong in this market, because it's we have a long way to go on the upside.
Bill, when we first started following the Bitcoin ETF, GBTC, less than a year ago, the ETF was around 100. Actually, I think it was 90-ish. Just last week topped 1,000, and it pulled back a little from that point, and we think we're probably near a good medium-term top. But still, that's a tenfold increase. There were very few opportunities for people thought they were going to time the markets to get on that train once it left the station. And I think that's what you're pointing to here, helping people to realize, look, the stores might be closed by the time this takes off. People could have trouble procuring what they need to protect their families. So it's always wise just to have a good, solid portfolio. Please tell people more about Gata and La Metropole Cafe.
Well, my colleague Chris Powell does a great job at Fregata, and to go to www.gata.org and get on his list. And the Metropole Cafe is now going into my 20th year. People can sign up for a 2-week free trial and see it if it's of interest.
All right, Bill Murphy, we appreciate your thoughts, sir.
Thank you, Chris. Bye-bye.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%, totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silver Corp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silver Corp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silver Corp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silver Corp Metals.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Dr. Stephen Leib has over 30 years of investment experience, former editor of Personal Finance, and had over 100,000 subscribers, author of several books. Welcome back, Dr. Leib.
Chris, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I return the compliments. You know, to me, it's a bit remarkable that the market is not really reacting that much to the threats from Korea and these horrible hurricanes, Harvey, which just devastated Houston and good part of Texas, I mean, you know, southern Texas. And now we have another hurricane that's approaching Florida. And I think the market's been really calm in the face of this, and I think that that's probably says a lot about, you know, the financial and economic underpinnings of the market right now. I think they're pretty good. Gold is very interesting at this point. And I think that my guess is that if I had to guess, and usually when you have to guess, you're usually wrong, but my guess is that gold could pull back a little bit here. But I think that we have very close to an all-in buy signal on gold. Longer term. Probably the most interesting news event surrounding any market was that surrounding gold in the past week or so. The Nikkei Asian Review, which I think is a very well-respected news source out of Asia, actually out of Japan, reported that China plans by the end of the year to launch a new oil benchmark, Eastern oil benchmark, and that's where the action is going to be in oil, because that's where the demand is going to come from in the East, and also the supply. I think they have about 75% of all the hydrocarbons in the world. They're going to trade this oil benchmark in yuan that's backed by gold. That could be a real game changer, Chris, for various reasons. Oil, despite the fact that it's, you know, trading, well, I guess Brent's a bit over 50, and I guess West Texas is around 50 right now, down, but it still is by far and away the most important commodity in the world. And as we know, one of the sources of the dollar's reserve currency status, a very critically important source, has been its role as a petrol currency. Oil's always been denominated in dollars, not always, but I guess, you know, at least for the last 40 plus years. This threatens to change that with all sorts of implications, because, you know, a currency backed by gold is going to be very, very attractive to Mideasterners. I mean, they like gold and they respect gold, and gold has a lot longer history than the dollar. And the yuan is basically, you know, assuming a much more prominent role. I mean, the Silk Road countries that China's trying to unite around, you know, infrastructure and trade, hard and soft economic policies and political policies, is an amazing center for growth. And probably will be where a lot of the growth in the world takes place over the next generation. And right now, China is the by far and away the major player in that part of the world. There's a good chance that this new trading vehicle, this new benchmark that denominated in yuan and gold, will spread to other trading, at least within the Eastern sphere. And that could mean that the dollar loses a lot of its reserve currency cachet. I mean, it may not happen overnight, but it just seems to me that it's the way the world is going at this point. China, by far and away, is the world's leading trader, and they're the leading trader in that part of the world which has the greatest growth, and it could be a very, very significant game changer on many, many levels. I think it speaks to much higher commodity prices almost across the board. It speaks to a much lesser role for the dollar. This doesn't mean doomsday for the United States, by no means, but it could mean, you know, more inflation, and it could mean that we have to adjust to some extent. The implications are very, very broad-based. It hasn't come to pass yet, but I really do suspect it will. And I have to say, I did say so about a year ago. This was my expectation. It just seemed like China is very uncomfortable with the dollar, and they were looking for a way out. This is the most logical way out. Take the most important commodity, start trading it with the yuan and gold as a backing. That takes you step one. I don't believe that the Chinese want to see the yuan as a reserve currency. I mean, there are responsibilities that go with that. My guess is, and again, I want to underline and boldface guess here, is that we may see some sort of cryptocurrency in which gold is a part. You can create blockchains in which other things are part of that chain rather than just currencies. You can create cryptocurrencies which include gold. I mean, you can create a blockchain that will accommodate those kinds of cryptocurrencies. And I have a feeling we'll see something like that used for trade within the Eastern sphere, probably within the next year or so. What that means for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, I'm not sure. They could still exist alongside of it. This might be a country-to-country kind of blockchain for doing a major trade, or it could be something more than that. I don't think any big guesswork at this point, but the fact is, the world is changing. I do see that this could be a game changer, what China plans to do with oil.
And China, you may have read recently, just created its own institute for cryptocurrency. So this is a government-sponsored, I don't consider either of us elitists, but it does require a PhD just to be invited to this institute where they're attempting to find ways to back the yuan with a blockchain-like structure. And I think that just supports your whole thesis. They are concerned by the soundness of our reserve currency and are interested in an alternative.
I think you raise a very good point about the Chinese institutes, et cetera. The Chinese tend to do everything methodically and with a very long-term perspective. I don't understand the intricacies of blockchain, et cetera. They are very, very complicated. And you do need probably a PhD in computer science to really understand the ins and outs. But what little I do know is that it requires tremendous computational, not only skills, but also the physical computational machines, massive computer facilities in order to do it. I think that literally, I mean, I've read reports that they're up to in terms of Bitcoin doing quintillions of calculations per second to keep track of all the transactions that take place and the mining of additional Bitcoin. So, I mean, you're absolutely right that this is not a simple task. In order to include gold as part of the blockchain, which is what I think they do plan. In fact, I'm quite sure they plan. I mean, there are so many reports out of China. I mean, just look at the color of their flag. I mean, it's gold stars on top of red. Gold is part of their culture. It's part of their DNA, if you will. And there are quotes from the secretary in charge of gold, actually, you know, that were written in Chinese, not necessarily for American consumption. You know, they say just straight out that gold is a key to the Chinese dream. And gold is a, you know, a very, very special metal in that it's both a commodity and a currency. So they do regard it as a currency, not just another financial asset, but as a currency. It would be a very interesting, well, not more than interesting. It would make a lot of sense if you are interested in gold and you do believe in the merits of blockchain. And I think there are a lot of merits to blockchains. I think they are secure. They could be made more secure, hence the Chinese investment, et cetera. There's a lot of good reasons for doing it. And I guess what I wanted to end up saying is the Chinese have been really prepared for this. By a large margin, they are the world's biggest producer of hydropower. And hydropower is very interesting because it's basically free. Once the dams are built, et cetera, it's free. Electricity. And electricity is a limiting factor in doing all these computer calculations. I mean, they're energy intensive. and you need free sources of electricity. And though if you look at just Bitcoin itself, right now the distribution of the trading in Bitcoin is basically, I think it's spread pretty evenly among the major economies of the world. It used to be China did about 80% of the trading in Bitcoin, but now, you know, we're up there. We do a lot of trading in this country too. But where China has a near monopoly is in the mining of Bitcoin. And they do about 80% of the mining. And again, that's because they have the world's largest supercomputers. And one reason they have the largest supercomputers is that they have the largest source of free energy in the world. This is a way in which they make use of this. Now, whether, you know, when they were thinking about this 10 years ago, I don't know. But it would not surprise me if they were. They have a very natural edge in all things cryptocurrency because they just have the computing power. They have a fantastic amount, and literally, I use that word advisedly, almost fantasy-like computing power over there. And that gives them the ability to dominate a lot of these cryptocurrencies or whatever is going to happen in the cryptocurrency world by buying stocks like Microsoft, Intel, NVIDIA, Applied Materials. There's a bunch of companies that will benefit from this. It's hard for me to see which of the cryptocurrencies will. Though, I mean, you know, I would have said the same thing admittedly 6 months ago, and look what's happened to Bitcoin.
Almost 8 years ago, I started mining Bitcoin just as a, you know, a lark. I thought it was an interesting project. But you're right. Since then, I'm sure you've heard of the halving. What happens is the difficulty increases almost exponentially. It's not so much the computing power at this point because, although you're absolutely right on the energy consumption, that's the, I think, the biggest constraint. Right now we have S3, S7, and S9 miners that you can purchase for, oh, I don't know, a couple thousand online, or about a kilowatt of power each unit per hour. And as you say, they have such inexpensive energy in China, and that has just facilitated everyday folks, not just the government, but small business people to capitalize on Bitcoin. And even when Bitcoin was low, they were thinking about the future, so they've accumulated huge resources of the cryptocurrency. I feel that Russia and China, they've really picked up the ball here, whereas we're behind the curve and even fighting it. I feel that our policymakers are fighting cryptocurrencies instead of recognizing there is an opportunity to benefit as a society from the trend. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I mean, there's certainly nothing happening on the governmental level as far as cryptocurrencies go, as far as our computer industry goes. I mean, everything is being done by private enterprise, which is great. I mean, I'm all for private enterprise. I'm all for our way of government. But I think that on certain major projects, the Apollo project, I mean, sending man to the moon, building an interstate highway, building out a cryptocurrency, blockchains, et cetera, there's nothing wrong with private and government cooperation. And I think that's sort of what China does. And they do try and assemble a collection of the best of the best, you know, in terms of kids and young computer programmers under the auspices of the government, and I guess to some extent companies like Baidu, but Baidu is working with the government in China. I mean, companies like Google are not really being in any way subsidized or helped by the government in terms of developing these kinds of projects. And it, you know, China just is out front on this, and I think we've got to wake up. I agree with you. If we want to maintain a real viable role, I mean, the last I heard was an article I think dated in June or July, I mean, very recent article, the amount of mining that we do of Bitcoin in this country is about 1%, which is ridiculous. China's doing 80 or 85% to our 1%, though we are trading it. But we're trading those Bitcoins that come out of China. And as you pointed out, as we get toward, you know, the limit on how many Bitcoins you can mine, and it's by design. It's one thing that makes Bitcoin, I think, very attractive and more, probably more attractive than the coin, what they call it, Ether, associated with the other major blockchain, Ethereum, is that Bitcoin is by design limited to 21 million. As you get toward that limit, it becomes, like you pointed out, it becomes extraordinarily energy intensive, computer intensive to do the mining. And as the number of transactions increase, it becomes extremely intensive to do those transactions, computer intensive. And we're not I mean, I think we're asleep at the switch, Chris. To be very honest, I think that's what you're saying, and I think that there's a lot of room for improvement.
What I find is maybe the big missed opportunity here for the Pentagon. This not only, I think, represents a threat to dollar hegemony, but it also, it's interesting because, you know, we always talk about the Chinese word for, you remember, opportunity is also that of danger, loosely there. Well, we see the same situation, I think, with the blockchain revolution that's underway, because the Pentagon has an opportunity here, and maybe you could say the current administration and Congress, but to pick up the ball here, because the blockchain revolution is going to rival the Forex. We think this is going to become a $5 to $10 trillion market. We think this will actually eclipse the Forex, so the Bitcoin being about 30% of that market. So I see Bitcoin at about a $3 to $4 trillion market in the next 10 years. What that means is the US dollar, of course, will shrivel to just almost third world status. And so the Pentagon really needs to get ahead of this, on, I think, the forefront of this, and establish for the military as well as for the federal government, because I believe our policymakers, they're sticking their collectively their heads in the sand, because they recognize millions of wasteful jobs will evaporate from the blockchain revolution, which eliminates all of that wasted time and useless paper pushing. And that's what blockchain does. And I think they're concerned about that, but instead they have to embrace it.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, regardless whether or not blockchain is part of a new reserve currency, which I think there's a good chance it will be with the Chinese, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's something that should be totally embraced for no other reason than it's, if done correctly, it's extremely secure, much more secure than the way we're doing things now. I mean, and again, who proves the point? The Chinese. I mean, look what they've stolen from us. I mean, they've stolen all our technologies. I mean, it's heartbreaking. It's terrible. But they have done that, and they've done it through hacking into our systems. I mean, they know more about people with clearance in this country than people themselves know. I mean, they have, you know, the biographies of all our leading spies at this point, because they've been able to hack into our systems. I mean, blockchain is, if anything, if nothing else, is a way of protecting against this kind of a hacking. And also, Chris, to second what you're saying, one of the companies that is extremely interested in using this right now, and is certainly active in a lot of trading, is NASDAQ. It's a public company. And it's one that I'm looking at very, very carefully. They may be using blockchain in the not-too-distant future, trading stocks, and that could give them a big leg up. But again, it's the fact that these companies have to go it alone. I mean, there's really no government support for it. And you're right, figuratively speaking, it's a crime that the Pentagon is not deeply involved in this technology at this point, deeply involved. So I could not agree with you more.
It's one of these big question marks, and I like the fact that you brought up the hacking. The reality is, if you look at the lack of security measures, especially at our local utility level and things of that nature, I mean, we really are just so behind the curve here. And I'm glad that there's folks like you who are sort of sounding the alarm, as with your book with Red Alert and others.
Yeah, I've been talking about it for a couple of years, but I think now is the time. More or less convinced that, you know, you are going to see really exciting things in the gold and precious metal markets.
The technicals seem to support your view there. It looks like we are, you know, all the stars are aligned here for some solid breakout to continue finally. I mean, we could also look at the United States. I think we forget how long we had silver currency in circulation. I'm sure you remember you had silver dimes, silver quarters.
Now I think about it, I remember, you know, silver being, you know, a word on the dime, and I think the quarter too. I mean, save those and some really rare baseball cards.
Eventually, you're right. A major, I think, country will definitely see the opportunity to link their currency, and it probably, as you said earlier, will be China. They're fed up, as you said, with the U.S. dollar.
Where I really hate to say it, and this is really chilling in a way. I mean, if the dollar loses a lot of its reserve currency status, especially in the East, then we lose the ability to impose sanctions on countries like North Korea. And I think that that is part of what's going on here. I mean, we're not going to be able to sanction North Korea unless we have the financial infrastructure to make those sanctions, you know, really have bite. And if we don't have the reserve currency, you know, that infrastructure goes by the wayside. And that worries the heck out of me. It really does. China right now is, you know, they're on the top of, on top of their game. And, you know, I think we've got to play catch up, but I think we can. And I just think that we have to recognize, you know, what's going on here. Whatever you think of him, and, you know, I had certainly a lot of qualms about him, but I think someone like Steve Bannon was aware of all this. He's gone. You know, and I had a lot of problems with Steve Bannon. I mean, you know, I really did. But I think he was still, you know, in terms of China, he saw us at economic war with China. And I think that that really has to be the way we view this at this point. I mean, you know, we don't want to get into any kind of physical wars, but an economic war. But we want a side where we still have, you know, control of our destiny. And I think we can do that. But it's going to take, I think, a change of perspective, if you will. I think that's sort of what you're saying. I think that we've dropped the ball. I mean, I think it's called, you know, wide-eyed complacency. And something's got to wake us up. I think that maybe when we see this benchmark being traded in yuan and gold, that may be the wake-up call. And maybe that'll really get us going. So, you know, yes, I think this is a great country. I think we're going through a very, very tough time now. And I think that, you know, there are two roads out. One, you know, being positive, in which we maintain control of our destiny, and one being, you know, much more negative, in which the Chinese have more control than probably they even want. I don't think the Chinese want hegemony over the whole world. I mean, that's not part of their culture. And why we should accept it. You know, we can maintain a lot of control of our own destiny.
If you really look at the country as a whole, they decided, look, we don't want too much interaction with other cultures. It always ends badly, it seems, for us. Let's try to maintain the status quo. This has been, I think, their modus operandi for at least 2,000 or 3,000 years. You know, the Opium Wars, their Tea Party, if you will. They toss the crates into the Gulf there. When I think of China, I don't think of an imperial, destructive...
Totally agree, Chris. There's no... I mean, you're absolutely right. Right. I mean, there's no evidence of it. It's almost, if we don't do something, we're almost forcing them into a position where they're going to, you know, assume hegemony. Not because they want to, but because the world will be chaotic if they don't. And there's no reason for that to happen. I mean, it would be really just a sin. And I don't think it will happen, because I don't think China wants it to happen. I mean, you know, China's interested in China. Interested in win-win situations as much as anything else. A win-lose situation creates problems down the road from their perspective. But a win-win situation, they're fine. They're happy. Their ethos is not that they are the best, but that they are self-fulfilled as a people. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're better or worse materially or anything else. It just means that, you know, what's good for China is good. It doesn't mean that what's bad for America is good for China. No, not at all. If it can be what's good for America is also good for China. So, yeah, I'm just saying in more words than I need to. I agree.
Exactly. And before we move on to the last topic here, precious metals, I'd just like to wrap it up. Much of China, at least the older China as we knew it, is still Taoist. I mean, they have those Taoist roots. And, of course, I think this is about harmony. It's about unity.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Because Xi Jinping, paramount leader of China, I mean, is not, I think, necessarily doing what he's doing. I think he's doing what he's doing because he thinks this is necessary for China right now to root out the corruption. But he's also been friendly toward Taoism, toward Buddhism, toward religion in general. He's not, you know, I don't know what his own personal views are. I don't know whether he's an atheist or agnostic or really a Buddhist or a Taoist. I don't know. But I do know that, you know, in his previous postings, he's been very friendly toward the religions. I mean, he thinks it's part of China's culture, and it is. You know, it's been around for thousands of years. You know, Confucianism, well, that's sort of a social religion. But, you know, also the other religions, he's not against it. Goes along with what, you know, you're saying. I mean, the leaders right now are sort of basically supporting, you know, are certainly not against religion. Providing it's not a direct threat to the state.
Can you give us an idea of just what might cause this breakout that we've seen in the yellow metal and silver in recent weeks? You know, might take us back to our former 2011 peak.
I think we're going to go well past those peaks, Chris, to be very honest with you. and I don't think it'll take a whole lot. Once gold is seen as backing a critical trade in the East, and that would be trade in oil, trade in other commodities, I think you'll see gold just fly. I mean, the value of gold right now, all the gold in the world is, I don't know, something a little bit less than $8 trillion. I don't know how much of that is available as either bars or investment, and it might be less than half. So you're talking $3, $4 trillion backing up many, many times that amount of trade that takes place. And, you know, that suggests that gold could go up, I think, many fold from here. I mean, I'm not saying tomorrow, but I do think that it's no longer a buy the dip, sell the rally kind of market. I think it's don't sell the rally, buy the dip. I think gold can go much higher than people think at this point. And I do think that the catalyst will be when China does start backing a currency, whether it be a cryptocurrency or whether it be just the yuan. At first, it'll be just the yuan, and I think that will gravitate into a cryptocurrency in which gold is a component. Gold's going to have to go up a lot in order to justify its role as backing trade, let's say, within the, if it's just the Eastern Hemisphere, would still be massive amounts of trade and growing trade. Trade that grows much, much faster than the supply of gold could ever grow. I mean, you know, we're basically at peak gold right now. I mean, I don't know whether we can even mine much more gold. I mean, I know China's been mining almost surely at a loss. I mean, they're the number one gold producer in the world. And their reserves are, they're not anywhere near number one. I think they've been mining, you know, 10 to 20% of their reserves every year. And the only way you can do that and add to reserves is mining at a big, big loss. So there's obviously a reason they've been doing this. And again, I think you'll see the reason very quickly with this, you know, new oil contract benchmark with gold as a backing. And I think that will be a massive catalyst.
You know, you've mentioned in the past that China could have as much as 30,000 tons of reserves.
What I think is probably, yes. I mean, I don't know if they have 30,000, but I would say that the numbers that I've seen that I'm pretty comfortable with, 20,000 tons. But the Silk Road itself, you know, the other countries along the Silk Road in total could have as much as 35,000 or 30, somewhere close to 35,000 tons of gold. And that's what really counts. And that would, you know, dwarf the amount of gold held by all the other countries outside the Silk Road. I mean, you know, some people even question the 8,000 tons that we supposedly have. But even if we do have it, and Germany has, I don't know, whatever it is, 3,000 tons, et cetera, if you add up all that, it's not going to come, it's going to come to probably less than half what's available in the East. So, yeah, they do have the resources, the gold resources, the East, in order to affect this. And China, you know, with 20,000 tons would be by far the leader. So, you know, this is not pie-in-the-sky stuff. It is speculation, as you say, but I think it's speculation with a lot of reason. We still seem to be misdirected, I think, you know, toward maintaining our leadership and our independence in this world is probably technology and doing what we've always done, created these technologies. I think this country lost so much when we lost Bell Labs, when we turned Bell Labs over to Lucent. I'm not even sure Lucent still exists, and I'm sure Bell Labs is a shadow of itself. You know, that was good. I mean, there was nothing wrong with AT&T sort of being a controlled monopoly, kind of a private-public company. I mean, in the sense, I mean, there were things wrong with that, but there were also things very good. And Bell Labs was, you know, that's where the transistor came from, where the laser came from. That's where the internet came from.
Yeah, Dr. Shockley and his team, the disruptive eight, are the ones that broke away from Shockley, who had just earned the Nobel Prize for his transistor that you referred to, all formed the Fairchild Semiconductor, which then went on, helped put us on the moon.
Massive resources in order to bring this stuff to fruition. Who was going to sponsor Shockley at all if not for the government and the private sector together? I mean, you know, the private sector, you know, doesn't have the luxury of spending right now, you know, tremendous amounts of money on something that'll pay off in 10 or 15 years. I don't think the Chinese private sector would do that either. They don't, even though long-term thinking is part of the Chinese culture, et cetera. It used to be part of our culture too, Chris. I mean, when I was a kid, I was always taught that, you know, you should save money and defer gratification. I mean, you know, not as a religious principle, but as an economic principle. I mean, you know, that's how you build up investment capital. And we've lost that. I mean, we really have. It would come back with a government that tends to be a little bit more forward-looking than the governments of recent years have been. I'm not making a Democratic or Republican comment here. I'm not saying which is best, but I'm just saying that, you know, governments that look ahead are governments that are going to, you know, secure the future of their countries. We have to do that here more. We have to sort of take a lesson from our own past and also from what China is doing in our present. And if we can do that, I think we can, you know, create or be part of a new world. And it could be very exciting or it could be very, very stressful, you know, depending on which fork in the road we take.
We certainly like to get folks over to The Complete Investor.
You can always drop me a line if you want to comment or drop you a line, and I'll be happy to comment on anything, you know, whatever.
Exactly. And, you know, we're still looking forward to your magnum opus on the yellow metal.
Right. Well, we do have the proposal's complete, and it's, I would say, you know, more than half the book. So, you know, it could happen. Chris, I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have the best day.
You too. Chris, it's always a pleasure.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%, totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp Metals.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. An interesting article of significant note appeared on September 1st in the Nikkei Asian Review, entitled China Sees New World Order with Oil Benchmark Backed by Gold. Yuan-denominated contract will let exporters circumvent U.S. dollar. The article begins by saying that China is expected shortly to launch a crude oil futures contract priced in yuan and convertible into gold in what analysts say could be a game changer for the industry. The contract could become the most important Asia-based crude oil benchmark, given that China is the world's biggest oil importer. The significance of this is that China's move will allow exporters like Russia and Iran to circumvent U.S. sanctions by trading in yuan. To further entice trade, China has said that the yuan will be fully convertible into gold on exchanges in Shanghai and Hong Kong. Most of China's crude imports, which averaged around 7.6 million barrels a day in 2016, are bought on long-term contracts between China's major oil companies and foreign national oil companies. Deals also take place between Chinese majors and independent Chinese refiners, and between foreign oil majors and global trading companies. Alistair MacLeod, the head of research for Gold Money, was quoted in this article and said the existence of yuan-backed oil and gold futures means that users will have the option of being paid in physical gold. It is a mechanism which is likely to appeal to oil producers that prefer to avoid using dollars and are not ready to accept that being paid in yuan for oil sales to China is a good idea either. This is definitely a transitional move, because unlike the petrodollar, which united the U.S. dollar with oil, this move unites the yuan with oil and physical gold. Definitely a game changer, because it reintroduces physical gold into the global commodity and economic equation. Perhaps this was a subject of discussion when Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin recently escorted Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to Fort Knox, where the two of them looked at and reviewed America's gold holdings. Only time will tell. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%, totaling 6.5 million ounces. Mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silvercorp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silvercorp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silvercorp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silvercorp Metals.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.